So, well, first of all, thanks, Alain, for this very kind invitation. I'm going to tell you a bit about what we do in the lab, and we are interested in relatively early aspects of adult neurogenesis, trying to understand how the neural stem cell pools that are found in the adult vertebrate brain, and that you've heard about a lot today, maintain their homeostasis through life. So this means understanding how these pools are formed, how they are patterned, how they are sustained, and how they can be recruited in a controlled way to contribute to adult neurogenesis. And for this, we use as main model system the dorsal telencephalon, the so-called pallium, in the zebrafish, in the adult zebrafish. And this is what you see here. This is a whole mount view from the top of the two telencephalic hemispheres of the zebrafish adult brain, pointing with anterior to the left. And on this picture, the stem cells have been stained by immunocytochemistry in green, and you see that they form a huge monolayer of cells that's covering the entire surface of the pallium. These cells are not only in high numbers, they are also actively neurogenic throughout life of the fish. And what you see here on this kind of 3D rendering is the stem cell layer in green, and underneath in red are all the pallial parenchymal neurons that have been formed by these stem cells throughout life. So we use this model because it's highly enriched in stem cells and actively neurogenic. So before I move on to the specific questions that we are asking in the lab, and since I realize I'm the only non-mammal in this symposium, I wanted to spend a few slides introducing this zebrafish system, first from the point of view of the stem cells, second from the point of view of evolution, how it compares with the mammalian stem cell systems, so that we are all on the same page before I start. So on a cross-section here at this level, this is what you get. It's a schematic of the telencephalon with the dorsal pallium and the ventral subpallium. And the stem cells have been drawn in green here. So this slide is kind of summarizing like 10 years of work from many different labs listed here. And the stem cells in this system were identified as radial glial cells that have their cell bodies that is aligned along the dorsal surface of the pallium and that extend long basal processes that cross the parenchyma and reach the pial surface of the pallium. Now, these radial glial cells were shown to be very strongly quiescent, to be self-renewing and multipotent, so they can generate in the adult additional stem cells by amplifying divisions. And also, so these are the green arrows, and also they can generate neurons that delaminate into the parenchyma, and these are indicated by the red arrows. And in addition, they are characterized by their expression of the enhancer of split BHLH transcription factor gene, HER4, which is the autolog of mammalian HES5. Now, in fact, in the zebrafish, this dorsal surface of the pallium is the ventricular zone, and this is due to a peculiar developmental process that occurs in teleost fish and that affects the telencephalon that is called eversion, and whereby the telencephalon, in fact, kind of opens along the dorsal midline of the neural tube and flips over to the sides so that you get this shape with the dorsal midline at the edges here. And so this results in exposing the ventricular surface to the outside of the pallium, but it's covered by a choroid plexus that crosses from here to the other end. The other consequence of this peculiar process is that it results in a mediolateral inversion of the territories that are developmentally homologous between mammals and teleosts, and that I've here highlighted by the different colors. So for example, the hippocampal area, which is medial in mammals, ends up laterally in teleosts. And in fact, here along the ventricular zone of the pallium, this would be in teleosts the equivalent position of the subgranular zone of the hippocampal area. Conversely, the amygdala, which is lateral in mammals, is medial in zebrafish. And here, in this area, is the equivalent of the subependymal zone. And in fact, this zone generates neurons that will populate the zebrafish olfactory bulb. And now in between, you have the neocortex area in mammals, and you have an equivalent territory here in yellow in zebrafish. Now, while neurogenesis in the mammalian neocortex is an embryonic phenomenon that stops at birth, neurogenesis here is continuous in the zebrafish, so that this entire, in fact, ventricular zone is neurogenic in adults. Now, at the molecular level, to further the comparison, what we and others have shown is that neural stem cells, so these radial glia here, are most of the time quiescent, but they oscillate between quiescence and activation. Once they get activated, they can undergo various types of divisions, some of which are asymmetrical and that contribute to the generation of neurons via transit-amplifying progenitors. We and others also identified a key signaling pathway, which is the Notch pathway, which is involved in two key aspects of stem cell maintenance, which are quiescence control and self-renewal. We showed that different Notch receptors were involved at these two steps, with Notch 3 maintaining quiescence and Notch 1 maintaining stemness. And this has been shown in parallel in many studies in the mouse, and this really stresses the real similarities at the cellular and at the molecular level between the stem cells that we find in the adult zebrafish pallium and the stem cells in adult mammalian niches, with one difference, which is the extent of neurogenesis, of course. So using the zebrafish pallium as a model, we can address in the lab a number of key questions in the stem cell field, which I think are shared between species and which I've summarized here. So the first is to understand how neural stem cell properties and fate can be encoded and what is the degree of heterogeneity within the stem cell population. The second would be how these parameters can integrate environmental cues, these cues being extrinsic or intrinsic. So, for example, the influence of other neural stem cells of the pool, of their state, or of their history. And third, given that the final output of neural stem cell activity is the production of neurons, it's interesting to understand whether and how the regulation of neural stem cell activity can impact functional neuroanatomy. So these various questions are addressed in the lab, and for today I'm going to focus on two questions, both of which deal with how neural stem cell activity can control the building of the brain, and in particular the pallium, the cytoarchitecture of the pallium. So the first part of the talk will deal with the control of neural stem cell activity and how the regulations of this activity can shape the organization of the pallium across evolution, comparing zebrafish with tetrapods. And then the second part of the talk, I will focus on heterogeneity, and I will ask the question of, in fact, how many different neural stem cell subtypes there are that can be revealed using the zebrafish, and whether these different neural stem cell subtypes can drive distinct neurogenesis cascades that may impact the physiology of the brain. So in the first part of the talk, I'm going to consider neural stem cells in a comparative perspective between species, and here I'm going to consider neural stem cells in a comparative perspective, but between different brain areas in the same species. And at the very end of the talk, if I have time, I'll just give you one slide about a new imaging technology that we recently developed, and that I think that permits the live imaging of neural stem cell pools in the intact fish. And this is an area where I think the zebrafish can really be instrumental to stem cell research. So starting with the first question, how can regulations of neural stem cell activity in time and space shape the organization of the pallium across evolution? So this is a work that is directed in the lab by Isabelle, who is here in the audience. She's a scientist in the lab, and she's been directing the work of an M2 student, Giacomo Furlan, and she works in collaboration with a postdoc, Valentina Cuccioli. So to put the question in other words, in fact, the idea is that functionally homologous networks between species can display very different cytoarchitectures and rely on different spatial arrangements of neurons, and that these different spatial arrangements can be generated through the control of neural stem cell activity. So here I've drawn some cartoons that reflect different scenarios. I've always drawn the neural stem cell layer in red, and then on top you have the neurons that have been generated from these stem cells, and the colors kind of depict neuronal identity. So here, for example, you see that continuous neural stem cell activity everywhere is going to generate neurons that will be organized in age-dependent layers. In contrast to this, strict spatiotemporal control of neural stem cell activity, with, for example, a premature termination of neurogenesis in one area of the ventricular zone, and in contrast, a delayed onset of neurogenesis in another area, will generate neurons that will be organized in nuclei. And then, of course, on top of this, you can add additional processes like neuronal migration or death that will modify the initial stem cell-dependent pattern. So the question of what is used across evolution to build functionally homologous structures but with different cytoarchitectures has been essentially looked at in the neocortex-like territory by comparing mammals and birds or reptiles. So in mammals, the neocortex has well-known layers, and these are generated through continuous neural stem cell activity, so through this process. But in birds and reptiles, there are some areas of the neocortex-like domain that share function with the mammalian layers, but that are organized in nuclei. And in the works that are cited here, this process was shown to be at play. Now, if we want to try and further the tree of pallium construction across vertebrates, we need to know what is the case in fish, and absolutely nothing is known in fish, including zebrafish. So as I mentioned in my introduction, the territory that is developmentally homologous to the neocortex is located about here. It's also functionally homologous to the neocortex. It's a domain that's involved in processing sensory information in teleost fish. It receives input from a nucleus that's called the preglomerular complex. That's a relay nucleus located in the diencephalon that plays an equivalent function to the thalamus. But how the neurons in the zebrafish pallium are organized based on their location of origin in the ventricular zone and based on their age is unknown. And so this is the question that we have tackled. So the only thing we know is that if you trace from embryo to adult the fate of radial glia neural stem cells, so this is done by means of genetic tracing using conditional Cre driven by the regulatory elements of the HER4 gene. So if you trace those radial glial cells to adult, you see that they will generate a large part of the radial glia neural stem cells of the adult and also most of the pallial neurons. But how these neurons organize based on their birth date in particular is unknown. So to address this, we have developed and used the TETON system. In our case, we drove the expression of the TET activator by the regulatory elements of HER4 to drive it in neural stem cells. And then in a double transgenic line, upon addition of doxycycline, the TET activator will bind its binding elements, and it will drive expression of two reporters, a GFP for control, and a stable mCherry that's fused to a histone. And this serves as a dilution marker. So it will be inherited, in fact, permanently in the cells that become postmitotic within a few cell divisions from the induction time point in the stem cell. And then it will, upon further divisions, it will become diluted. So we can use it to birth date the neurons that have been born soon after the induction. So we did this. We subjected double transgenic fish to treatments with doxycycline at different time points from embryo to mid-juvenile stage, and we look at the position of the mCherry-labeled neurons in the adult pallium here at 3 months. And what you see here are cross-sections of the pallium in an adult at 3 months. We always take sections at the same level, and here we've surrounded in red the location of the mCherry-positive neurons. These adults result from animals that have been induced with doxycycline at increasing stages from 10 somites of embryogenesis until 1.5 months of age. And what you see is that the neurons distribute in almost perfectly concentric circles, that with the oldest neurons or the oldest born neurons in the center and the progressively younger born neurons towards the periphery. So overall, this suggests that the mode of pallial formation that we have in the zebrafish is what we call a pile-up process, where the neurons, in fact, delaminate from the ventricular zone and dive into the parenchyme at the same time as the ventricular zone grows by stem cell amplification. And this process contributes to brain growth in all directions during life. So these are maps of the in the adult brain of the position of the neurons that were born at these different stages from embryo to adult. Now, we have age-related layers, and we haven't found any evidence for mixing, at least radially, across age-related layers in this pallium. Now, is there some spatial-temporal regulation of neural stem cell activity that contributes to this? To address this, we moved to the CRIS system. So we drove this time still under the HER4 regulatory elements expression of a conditional CRI. And we use a switch line that's ubiquitous and switches from green to red upon recombination. So this will label all the neurons that are born from the stem cell from the moment of recombination onwards. So it's not used to birth date the neurons, but to see whether from the moment of recombination, the stem cells have been continuously neurogenic until the time of analysis. So we applied tamoxifen at different time points again, from early embryo to juvenile. And this is one example on a cross-section of the pallium of the distribution of the M-cherry-positive cells after a recombination induced at 15 days. And so you see that these neurons distribute broadly. In fact, they extend from this dotted line here, which is the position of where the neurons that are born at 15 days map, as identified by the TETON system I showed previously. And then these neurons extend throughout the depth of the pallium until the currently active neurogenic zone at the external surface. And we did this at many different times, and we always get a comparable result. And this indicates that at the population level, at least, the HER4-positive neural stem cells are in fact continuously neurogenic from embryo to adult. So is this true at the single cell level? And to address this, we have still used the CRI technology, but we turned to the BrainBow system to identify clones. So we apply tamoxifen early at a low dose to generate clones, and we look in the adult at the what the clones look like in the pallium. Now here, the zebrafish is very advantageous because we can completely clear the entire telencephalon, and we can observe it in 3D. That's what you see here with the two hemispheres. And there we can really segment and record the position of every individual cell in every individual clone of these brains. And in total, we have looked at 7 brains and 33 clones, and you see some clones here with the different colors. So we can extract a lot of information from this, but for the point I want to make here, if I can move to the next slide, these are extracts of this big telencephalon, where you see 4 selected clones with the different colors that extend from the deepest areas in the pallium, so those that are where neurons are generated in the embryo, until the currently active stem cell layer. And these reflect clones generated by stem cells that have been continuously neurogenic from embryonic stage to adult, so individual stem cells. So to gain insight into how frequent this was, we have categorized our clones based on qualitative and quantitative criteria. And what we see is something like this. This is an extract of our classification. So we find 2 types of clones, some that are attached to the ventricular zone and some that are detached. So the clones that are attached have these shapes. This is the neural stem cell layer. This is the so-called DC, which is the most central domain of the pallium, corresponding to neurons generated during embryogenesis. So the clones attached to the ventricular zone correspond to single individual neural stem cells that have been continuously neurogenic from the moment when they started being neurogenic. And they started this at different time points, reflected by the different extent of the clone. Now, the clones that are detached, in contrast, reflect the behavior of neural stem cells that have stopped being neurogenic and have been lost in the process of going through adulthood. Now, if we look at numbers, the majority of clones found are of this type, so long clones, and we find at least, this is dying off, so I don't know if you have another one, but, don't worry, I can, maybe if I press harder. So in fact, we find at least 6 clones here that are reaching really very deep and that correspond to neural stem cells that have been active throughout from embryonic stages to adulthood. So to conclude on this first part, we believe that in zebrafish, the control of neural stem cell activity is really a primary mechanism that's accounting for the organization of the mature pallium, like in mouse and birds and reptiles. And there are several traits of this that are reminiscent of mammals, like the continuous neurogenesis from individual stem cells and the generation of neurons ordered by age. And to further the comparison, compared to the mouse and the birds, I have drawn here a teleost, so with the ventricular zone and the neurons produced. In the mouse, through neuronal migration, we generate an inside-out pattern. There's no radial migration in teleost, so we generate an outside-in pattern. A major difference with mouse also is that Neurogenesis process stops at the end of embryogenesis in mouse, but continues through life in teleosts. And so this now this model raises interesting questions pertaining to the identity of the neurons that are generated here compared to each other and compared to the neurons generated in the embryo here. Also related to the functional organization of these neurons, and to know finally whether the neuronal identities that are here are or not encoded at the level. Merci. At the level of the neural stem cell itself. And just to show you where we stand on this very briefly, in collaboration with Corinne Noir, we have been trying to map, to define neuronal identities in the pallium, and for this to map the expression in the fish pallium, in the adult and at embryonic stages as well, and juvenile stages, of markers that characterize upper or deep layers of the neocortex in mouse and human. And this is kind of a summary of what we get. Merci. For those genes here, and these are some examples of in situs. So it's very difficult to draw some very precise conclusions, but I just would like to draw your attention onto these genes here, which in fact appear expressed in kind of a salt and peppery manner across what we know now is a broad layer, a broad range of ages, and which I think suggests that some neuronal identities at least could be reiterated over time in the neurons that are generated possibly within a clone from an individual stem cell, and we are working on this now. So switching gears and moving now to the second part of the talk, which is comparing stem cells not across species but across territories. The question we ask is how many neural stem cell subtypes there could be, whether they drive different neurogenesis cascades, and which impact this could have on brain physiology. So again, this is work that's directed by Isabelle with the help of an engineer, Sonia Gallon. So the first hint at the existence of distinct neural stem cell subtypes, in fact, came from our previous analysis a couple of years ago of the developmental origin of stem cells in the pallium. And what we had found is that in the embryonic pallium, here represented on cross-section, there are two types of progenitor cells. The radial glia that I've told you about before, they are here drawn in orange, they express HER4. And another type of progenitors that are neuroepithelial cells that are here drawn in purple, so they don't express glial markers, and they express other enhancer of split genes like HER6 and HER9 that are orthodox of mammalian HES1. And when we genetically traced the fate of these two progenitor subtypes, we found that the radial glia give rise to the neural stem cell, radial glia neural stem cells of the medial and dorsal pallium, which I've just told you about in the neocortex-like area, but that the lateral neural stem cells, which are in the hippocampal area in fish, originate from these neuroepithelial cells. And more interestingly even, we found that the neuroepithelial pool here is maintained at the very lateral edge of the pallium, which is in fact the dorsal midline, the attachment point of the choroid plexus here. And these neuroepithelial cells serve as a constant source for new adult neural stem cells, adult radial glia, throughout adulthood in the fish. So in the pallium, at least, we concluded that there were several neurogenesis hierarchies, at least two, one that is driven by adult radial glia. These are inherited from embryonic radial glia, and they are self-renewing and multipotent in the adult. And some one neurogenesis mode that is driven by neuroepithelial cells in the adult. These cells are inherited from neuroepithelial cells in the embryo, but they persist, and they serve as a permanent adult neural stem cell source in the adult brain to generate self-renewing and multipotent radial glia. So the question we asked was whether these processes were used anywhere else or whether it was a peculiar mode of development of the adult pallium. So to address this, we looked at another territory, which is the optic tectum, because in this domain, neuroepithelial cells had been described in the adult. So very briefly, this is a cross-section of the optic tectum. This is the cerebellum, the optic tectum. It's composed of a neuronal layer, which is deep, and a more superficial neuropile. And then along the ventricle, you have an alignment of radial glial cells that extend processes towards the pial surface. The optic tectum is a structure that grows through life, and it grows through the activity of a so-called tectal proliferation zone that's located at the posterior edge here. Now, some years ago, we had described here in this very posterior location a neuroepithelial cell layer that is now called the posterior midbrain layer. and that contained a pool of cells expressing an enhancer of split gene, HER5, and this is what you see here revealed in a transgenic line. So in summary, in the optictectum, in the adult optictectum, we have different cell types. We have neuroepithelial cells that express HER5. We have radial glial cells here that express HER4. And we have the generation of neurons. So this is very similar to what we have in the lateral pallium. In the lateral pallium, we know that these cell types are organized in a hierarchical series of neurogenesis. So the question we asked was whether this was also the case in the tectum. And the specific questions we tried to answer were, So first of all, whether the postembryonic HER5-positive neuroepithelial cells that we find here were inherited from an embryonic neuroepithelial pool. The second question is whether these cells are at the origin of tectal radial glia. And the third question was whether these radial glia are at the origin of these neurons, which was something not understood until now, because so far these neurons were believed to originate purely from the tectal proliferation zone. So very briefly on these three points, regarding the embryonic origin of the postembryonic neuroepithelial pool in the tectum, we noted that, in fact, the HER5 gene was not only expressed in the adult, but also in the embryo. And in the embryo, that's what is illustrated here, it's expressed in a very discrete domain that's already located in the posterior edge of the tectum. So we hypothesized that those cells could be at the origin of the late HER5-positive pool. And to see whether this was the case, we generated a conditional Cre line driven by the HER5 promoter. We used our switch line, and we induced recombination in the embryo. And that's what you see here. You see, so the arrows point to the posterior midbrain layer, and you see here that it's MCHERRY positive, so indicating that this neuroepithelial layer originates from the HER5 positive pool in the embryo. Now, to know whether this here, the postembryonic HER5 positive zone, was at the origin of radial glia in the postembryonic tectum, we used the same strategy, but we induced at postembryonic stages the recombination. And when we look in the adult at the MCHERRY cells, we always generate kind of, the recombination is mosaic, so we generate like polyclones in the adult. And in fact, we generate transversal polyclones in the tectum that comprise neurons that you have here in blue and radial glial cells that you have here in green. So the postembryonic neuroepithelial HER5 positive cells are at the origin of the radial glia in the tectum. Are these radial glia neurogenic? So to answer this, we use the HER4 Cre line because they are HER4 positive and the switch line. We applied tamoxifen at different time points at postembryonic stages, and we look in the adult. Now, when we do that, and you have here an example of a cross-section of the tectum, we systematically find polyclones generated from this HER4 radial glia, and you see one polyclone here in red. These polyclones comprise neurons and radial glia. So the postembryonic radial glia in the tectum are neurogenic. Now what you see here is anterior to this polyclone here, you have some radial glial cells that have been recombined. They are red, but they are not overlaid by neurons, indicating that, yes, the postembryonic tectal radial glia are neurogenic, but probably not all of them are. And in fact, in a series of experiments that I don't have time to show you, we showed that the neurogenic competence of the radial glia is limited to a short time window, which in fact coincides with the location of those radial glia close to the HER5 positive zone. So soon after their generation from the HER5 positive pool, they are neurogenic, and then they lose this neurogenic competence. So the summary scheme of the model we have of the neurogenic sequence in the tectum, in the postembryonic tectum, is as follows. So the neurogenesis in this postembryonic tectum is driven by neuroepithelial cells. These cells express HER5. They are inherited from embryonic neuroepithelial cells that happen to express HER5 as well. And these cells generate radial glia that are transiently neurogenic and self-amplifying, and that later on lose their neurogenic competence. So those radial glia that are further away from the source have generated their neurons, but they are no longer neurogenic. So this is obviously very similar to what I showed you for the lateral pallium, which is the hippocampus once again. You have the same generation of stem cells from a neuroepithelial progenitor pool inherited from the embryo. So this indicates that neuroepithelial cell-driven neurogenesis is in fact shared by at least two territories of the adult brain. And regarding the central nervous system, we should also include the retina, which has a very similar mode of neurogenesis. Now, there's one major difference between these two systems, which is that here the neurogenic activity of the radial glia is limited in time, while here in the pallium it's permanent. So if I want to add age onto this drawing to kind of make the link between with the first part of my talk, age being reflected in neuronal identity here, the transient neurogenic capacity of the radial glia in the tectum generates polyclones that are ordered by age, with the oldest one anteriorly and the youngest one close to the source, while in the pallium, the continuous neurogenic activity of the stem cells adds a vertical dimension to age that dives into the telencephalic parenchyme. So just to conclude, neuroepithelial-driven neurogenesis is a prominent alternative neurogenesis mode, we believe, in the postembryonic central nervous system. And so now I just want to discuss a few further characteristics and the relevance of this for brain physiology. So a few further characteristics that you may find of interest, I don't know, but I'm sharing them, is that most of the time, those neuroepithelial pools in the adult brain are found at the junction between the neural tissue and some other tissues like epithelia or plexus or choroid plexus. And these junctions often act as signaling centers and express signaling molecules, both in the embryonic and in the adult central nervous system. Another characteristic which I think is very important is that those neuroepithelial pools are independent of notch signaling for their maintenance. I showed you in my introduction that the radial glia neural stem cells were strictly dependent on notch. Those pools are not dependent on notch. And in fact, this shows that what we really have at those sites in the adult brain is a true recapitulation of an embryonic sequence of progenitor maturation that persists in the adult brain, with, at the origin, a notch-independent neuroepithelial pool that changes into an amplifying notch-dependent neuroepithelial pool. I haven't shown you the data for that. And that transits into proliferating radial glia and then later on quiescent radial glia. Now, what may be the relevance of this alternative neurogenesis mode? I think it's at least twofold. The first is that those territories here that are driven by neuroepithelial pools serve as growth zones in the postembryonic CNS. This is in part due to this transit, to this amplifying intermediate pool here. And growth zones are very important if you want to generate domains in the brain that will grow anisotropically, for example, late in stage, like the hippocampus, for example, or various brain territories that expand massively in some species in the brain. The second, I think, interesting aspect, relevant aspect, is that those zones, in fact, serve as long-lasting sources of young neural stem cells in the adult brain. And we have some evidence that these young neural stem cells display distinct activation or regeneration properties compared to their old counterparts that were generated from radial glia. And now, is this of any interest at all when it concerns species other than fish? So I've tried to summarize on this slide some hints at parallels that can be perhaps drawn with mammals. First of all, regarding the hippocampus is a structure that's developing notoriously late in mammals and from neural stem cells that are generated from, in part, from a postembryonic pool of progenitors. And in a paper that was published in 2013 by the group of Sam Pleasure, in this paper they had mapped the location of those progenitors contributing to the postembryonic hippocampal neural stem cells to a very discrete pool of cells that was located posteriorly in the telencephalon, posteriorly in the telencephalon at the junction between the most caudoventral part of the hippocampus and the amygdala. And the diencephalon. And in fact, this is exactly the location where we find our small neuroepithelial pool of progenitor cells. And I think it would be very interesting to look in the mouse whether this source for neural stem cells could serve as a long-lasting pool. Regarding the midbrain, in some papers from Verdon Taylor's lab, in particular this paper, a notch-independent neuroepithelial territory has been described at the posterior edge of the mouse midbrain that could serve as an equivalent to our tectal neuroepithelial pool. Finally, in the retina, in human retinal explants, we can induce progenitor markers in a territory that looks like a ciliary marginal zone, which, as I said, behaves like the tectum and the lateral pallium in terms of being driven by neuroepithelial cells. So I think there's, I leave this for thought, but there's ways of looking into whether we can find further comparisons in mammals. All right, so now to end, I'm completely going to switch topics almost and just briefly mention an imaging tool that we developed and that I think will be very useful to look at neural stem cells live in their endogenous niche. This was developed in the lab by a staff scientist, Nicolas, with the help of our FISH technician, Sébastien Bedu. It's a collaboration with Emmanuel Beaurepaire and Willy Soupato at the École Polytechnique. So basically what is done here is an attempt, so we really wanted to try and image stem cells live in their niche without doing any invasion to the brain, and we thought we could make use of the fact that the neural stem cells in the pallium, as I mentioned, are located superficially due to the eversion process. So we have used transparent FISH, which are double mutant for pigmentation genes, they are called Casper. And we cross these transparent mutants into various transgenic backgrounds that can highlight stem cells or dividing cells or, you know, different cell states. We record directly on anesthetized fish, adult fish, through the skin and the skull. We record the fluorescence, and we also record harmonic signals, and these harmonic signals are very good at reporting collagen-rich structures, like, for example, the skin and the skull, and we use this to align our images over imaging time points. And what you see here is a 3D kind of view of imaging of a live animal through the skin and the skull, so in cyan are the harmonics, down onto the pallial neural stem cell layer that you see here in green. You see radial glia and their process. And just to give you an idea of the resolution we get, this is a movie that will move you into imaging. The stem cells here are in red, and then at the end of the movie you'll see we switch on the green channel, and this is a line that reports stem cell activation. So at this point, so we are diving into the stem cell layer through the skin and skull. Okay, the animal is alive, and these are activation events in this layer. And then you will see different time points of imaging. So over different weeks. So using this method, we can really record at the single cell level over 1,000 cells over months of imaging. And we have used this in a publication that was published recently to look at spatial regionalization and stem cell division modes of the neural stem cells in the pallium. But our idea is to use this to, in particular, look which properties can emerge from stem cells being organized as a pool as opposed to being individual stem cells. So in other words, we want to look at how the behavior of an individual stem cell can be influenced by the behavior of the state of its neighboring stem cells in space and over time. So this was just to throw perspectives, although I don't have more data to show. And finally, I will end by thanking the people who did the work. So I've shown you work from those people in red here. And I'd like especially to thank our collaborators, Emmanuel Beaurepaire at Polytechnique, Nelly Villemin from his lab, who helped us analyze the clones, which I showed you in the first part of my talk, and Corinne Noir for very insightful discussions on pallial markers. And these are our funding sources. Thank you very much.